Hey, it's Francis, and you know, it's time for summer parties again, and this episode from last year has it all. It's got food you're going to want to make, drinks you're going to want to mix, but really the best part is that it's got the key to partying stress-free from a laundry expert. You are never going to have to let the threat of a spill get in the way of a good time again. Check it out. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. Ladies and gentlemen, I have seen the future. And by that, I mean the weather got to 90 degrees this past weekend, so even in the Northeast, our nice warm days are numbered. And it's time for me to get ready for cookout, picnic, and barbecue season. And honestly, I am psyched for it, which is nice because I was also cursing for the entire 2 hours it took me and my wife to install our air conditioner this weekend. But anyway, later on the show, we're going to talk with Nicole A. Taylor, author of the new book Watermelon and Redbirds, which is all about the cookout recipes and traditions of her African-American community, where she is a potato salad queen. To quench your thirst, we have world-renowned bartender Natasha David, who is absolutely into making serious drinks easy, delicious, and light on the alcohol, so you can have that happy buzz all afternoon. She's the author of Drink Lightly. And for our first guest, all right, you might laugh or even scratch your head a little bit, but we have a laundry expert. I'm serious, because look, isn't there this awful irony in the fact that this is the time of year where, you know, you're supposed to wear your beautiful white linen clothes or whatever, and you're going to go somewhere where you're going to eat standing up with a drink in your hand, like frisbees and dogs flying around? Like, I know we all feel it, right? The stress of, can I really enjoy this nice party when I am deathly afraid of ruining these nice clothes that I only wear twice a year because I'm deathly afraid of ruining these nice clothes? Anyway, Patrick Richardson is here to help you get rid of the fear of a burger drop ruining your entire day. He's the author of Laundry Love. So, hey, Patrick, great to talk with you.
Oh, it's so great to talk with you. I'm so excited to be here.
The same. So I know you're from the South, so I know you love a barbecue, a cookout, but, you know, someone who cares deeply about the cleanliness of our clothes, I'm sure you also feel that this is a dangerous time.
I don't think it's dangerous because, you know, why would you deny yourself the incredible pleasure of barbecue when, you know, you just learn a few stain trips and you can wear, like, you know, white linen with abandon, I guess.
Oh, but I like the confidence. I like the confidence. But actually, okay, so let's take back a little bit. And let's talk about you. How did you become the laundry evangelist?
Well, it's actually really funny. One of my earliest memories, speaking of the South, is putting clothes on the clothesline with my granny dude. And I guess at just a very early age, I associated, like, the act of doing laundry with the act of caring for somebody because, I mean, I loved her very deeply and she loved me very deeply. So, and my mother is the ultimate sort of housekeeper and hostess. So, you know, I just sort of grew up with this idea of cleanliness and I loved it so much that when I turned 3, that Christmas, Santa brought me a toy washing machine. So starting at 3, I had my own toy washing machine and you could actually put water in it and turn the little crank and it would do its thing. So, just had this long-standing love affair with laundry.
But then how did you like develop your skills as a laundry person?
Well, I studied apparel and textiles at the University of Kentucky.
Okay.
And we had this incredible costume collection and I got really interested in the idea of laundry sort of conservation, you know, like apparel conservation. And so when I left the University of Kentucky, I went to work for Neiman Marcus and then for Nordstrom. So I got to see, you know, incredible sort of modern clothes, you know, like the best of the best in the modern world. But the whole time I thought, well, there's nothing here I can't wash. And the final piece of that puzzle is I opened a vintage store of designer vintage maybe 9.5 years ago. And if you work in a store, you know that the biggest complaint everybody has is, oh, I'm not going to buy that because I don't want to dry clean it. So I started teaching people how to wash these vintage clothes just because, you know, I wanted them to buy them and wear them. And then I just wanted everybody to not be afraid. So from there, I started telling people and, you know, word grew and here we are.
Yeah, but a lot of things you know are not things that, like, other people know, right? So, well, like, is it experimentation? Is it school? Is it understanding the you know, the material science of different fabrics?
Well, it would be the understanding of the fabric, you know, which I learned at the University of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
But then also understanding just sort of in the case of, like, food stains, understanding what the stain is. You know, once you know that, you know, an acid will break down an oil, you can sort of figure out, okay, there's oil in barbecue sauce, since we're talking about barbecue. You know, mm-hmm. there's oil in barbecue sauce, so an acid's going to break it down. And so, you know, always, like, in that case, my go-to acid is vinegar. So, you know, it's some experimentation with sort of that foundational knowledge. But then, you know, a lot of it, which I think is what is key for everybody at home, is to just be fearless. You know, know that there are very few things you can do as long as you're not using, like, really caustic chemicals. There's very few things you can do to damage your clothes.
Oh, that's so interesting. Because I do have a level of fear. Like, oh my God, if this, you know, I can't wash this. It says dry clean only. I put it in the washer. It's gonna disintegrate.
Oh, I have a great tip.
Hmm.
I have the best tip in the world for, you know, like when you have a tag and it says dry clean only, just cut it out and then it doesn't say that. And then you're good to go.
All right. Okay. So I am itching to ask you about all of the different things we were going to wash out of our clothes this summer. But before that, I do want to ask you this other question, which is, I don't know if it's impolite or not, but I'm going to do it anyway. So you teach classes, you teach laundry camps.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, because I have literally never talked to anyone who does that. What is the most fascinating thing you've learned about people when they come to you with their literal dirty laundry?
What is the most? That's a great. You know, nobody's ever asked him. What a great question. The most fascinating thing, and I mean, I think it's the most fascinating for me, is we think logically that our clothes are just clothes, right? And so we just logically think, you know, this shirt is just a shirt. But really, when people start talking about the shirt or the handkerchief or the wedding dress, you realize how much emotion is tied up in it. And the thing that I find most fascinating is how much we pretend not to care about our clothes. And we're like, oh, I just threw this on. But the truth of the matter is we care very, very deeply. And when we lose something because, you know, we spilled red wine on it, and we didn't know we could fix it, you know, it's pretty upsetting. So it's funny. People come to laundry camp because they're desperate, because some concert t-shirt that they got at a concert when they were in college is now stained, and it just matters a lot. So that's the thing I find most fascinating. The other thing that I find that's really funny is people are so afraid of their clothes. You know, like, they're just so afraid to do damage. You know, and I guess we have this idea that so many of the chemicals that are in our house are just so caustic and so toxic, we're afraid of them. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, you shouldn't be using that kind of stuff because you don't need it. The efficacy of, like, safe cleaners, you know, like simple things around your house, like lemon juice and, you know, vinegar and baking soda, will just do a world of good. You know, our great grandmothers knew all these tricks and we should have just listened.
That's great. All right. So cool. So let's get into some of these specific scenarios. Let's play a little game, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, it's summer cookout season. It is, with a cruel sense of irony, the time when we are supposed to wear beautiful things like white linen. And then we're walking around, you got the drink in your hand. Maybe it's a beautiful cocktail. Maybe it's a glass of red wine. Inevitably, someone's throwing a Frisbee, or that dog that you love runs up on you, and next thing you know, you're wearing your stuff. So, okay, what do I do if I am now suddenly wearing a glass of red wine?
Well, the first thing you do is laugh, because that's really funny, and there's no reason to worry. One thing I always say, and I say it in laundry camp, is if you come to my house and you spill red wine, the only thing I do is pour you more. There's no need to panic. Just enjoy the party, because, you know, that's the best thing, is just to enjoy the party. And when you're ready to wash it And that could mean that evening. It could be next Sunday. You do not have to do it immediately. You can do it when you have time. Red wine will come right out with oxygen bleach. If you mix up a quart of warm water and a tablespoon of oxygen bleach, and you put your, you know, white and pink gingham linen shirt covered in red wine in it, the red wine will disappear. And then you just toss it in the washer and you're good to go.
Seriously, it's that easy.
It's that easy.
Wow.
There's nothing to be scared of. Red wine is, you know, red wine is so good. There's nothing bad about red wine.
There's no downside to red wine.
Exactly. It's good for your heart, even.
I have heard that. Okay, and that's irrespective of material? Like, you would...
That's safe for everything except wool or silk. But to be completely honest with you, I have done it to wool and silk, and I haven't had any problems. But technically, when you do it with wool and silk, you literally have to put it in, swish it for 30 seconds, and immediately wash it. But yeah, it's totally fine.
Okay. And oxygen bleach, it's not, that's not like Clorox bleach. Like, that's a different thing.
Right. That's bad. Clorox bleach is bad. You don't need that anywhere in your house. Oxygen bleach is good. Oxygen bleach is basically dry hydrogen peroxide.
Do you mean like OxyClean?
Well, oxygen bleach is the active ingredient in OxyClean, but OxyClean has a lot of fillers. What I actually mean is 100% sodium percarbonate. So you just look on the label and you want 100% sodium percarbonate because that's sort of the magic ingredient.
And where do you find that?
You can buy it at like hardware stores, co-ops. You can actually also buy it at brewing supply places because it's what brewers use to clean all of their equipment. And then, you know, it's easy to find online as well. But it'll say that it's oxygen bleach.
Okay, cool. And actually, now that you mentioned that, I do have a beautiful silk Chinese, I don't know what we call it, but basically it's the Chinese equivalent of a suit that I had made many, many years ago. It's beautiful navy blue, but it had white cuffs. And someone spilled red wine on those cuffs. And this is probably 10 years ago. It still hangs in my closet. I've never worn it since. Would it still work?
Oh, it would totally still work. Easy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I've got my formal wear set. Can't wait to get spilled on again.
Right. You're good to go. You just need a little oxygen bleach and some water and a steamer. And all will be okay.
We're talking to Patrick Richardson, author of Laundry Love. We'll have more with him in a minute. And then we'll celebrate Juneteenth with Nicole A. Taylor, author of Watermelon and Redbirds. Stick around. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is the show for curious cooks and eaters. We're talking right now with Patrick Richardson, the laundry evangelist, who is just an unbelievable font of knowledge when it comes to getting rid of every possible cookout stain. So let's get back to it with him. Okay, so here's another scenario. You have your plate, you see your friends under a tree, you go over, and then you ask yourself, should I really sit down on the grass?
You should totally sit down on the grass, because your friends are way more important than your clothes, and we can get the clothes clean. Grass stains, if you get a horsehair brush and some laundry soap, the key here is to wet the brush, rub the brush across the bar of soap, and get lather in the brush, go in the grass stains, and scrub, and then just toss in the washer, it'll come right out.
Just like that?
It's that simple, yeah. It's pretty easy.
Okay, right on. We're getting on a roll here. Okay, so what else? I'm eating a burger. It's unbelievably delicious. It's so juicy. Oh my God, look, it's all over my chest. What do I do about burger grease?
Oh.
Or just any kind of meat grease?
Burgers are delicious. It's probably, like, if I had to choose a favorite food, burgers are in the top five. And in fact, the next time you come to Minnesota, you know, you can get a Juicy Lucy where they put the cheese in the middle. It's the most incredible thing. But anyway.
I still have never had one.
Oh.
I know. I hear they're legendary.
As soon as we are done, I need you to just run to the airport. There's the best place is right by the airport. We can be there, and I can get you back on a plane and home for time for dinner. It's super easy. You can actually just spray it with a mixture of vinegar and water.
Okay.
I keep a spray bottle of 50 cheap white vinegar, 50 water.
Okay.
With my laundry and burger grease, just spray vinegar and water on it, toss it in the washer, and it'll come right out.
Okay. So, and do you spray, is this something you have to do right away? You can do just when you're ready to wash it?
You can just do it when you wash it. I mean, I only do my laundry once a week. So if I got burger grease on it, you know, today, I'll throw it in the hamper until Sunday when I do my laundry. And then I'll just spray the vinegar and water on then and toss it in.
Okay, great. And actually, so when we say grease, I mean, we're talking about the fat, but obviously with a burger or with a steak, it's never just fat, right? There's going to be like the protein. There's going to be, you know, the other juices of that meat too.
Sure.
Treat the same way?
Generally, those will wash out. I mean,
okay.
If for some reason you were having like, you know, an incredible, like really rare steak, which also sounds delicious right now, you know, you will get those juices and you might have to use a little oxygen bleach. Most of the time, it's just the fat and the grease that's holding on to that whole stain. So okay. Once you break that fat and that oil down, the rest of the stain will just wash away. So I would still spray it with vinegar and water and toss it in the wash. Because the one thing to know, as long as you haven't put it in the dryer, if you run something through the washer and there's a stain still there, it's still super easy to just treat it again.
As long as you don't run it through the dryer.
Yeah, I mean, if you run it through the dryer, we're still going to get it out. It just takes more steps.
Okay. Well, let's get to that later.
Yeah.
Okay. So what else are we going to get on ourselves? We're definitely going to get ketchup on ourselves, and we're probably going to get barbecue sauce on ourselves. So we're talking probably tomato or tomato-based or mustard. Vinegar-based sauces will often have, you know, red pepper in them.
Right. So the red, we'll start with the red. So that would be the barbecue or the ketchup, you know, that sort of thing. That mm-hmm. will come out with just spraying it with vinegar and water. Mustard is special. And mustard, it's because of that, you know, that yellow, that turmeric that makes it so yellow. Mm. You need to spray that with vinegar and water, scrub it, and then dip it in oxygen bleach. Because you have to get the oil off of the stain because, you know, oil and water don't mix. So mm-hmm. the oil kind of protects that yellow color. So once you break down the oil, the oxygen bleach will take out the yellow. It's not hard. You just have to do it in two steps.
Okay. Because turmeric, what makes a lot of yellow mustard is a little bit of turmeric, basically, that they put in for the color, right? It's not really right. The mustard itself. So we're talking about turmeric staying there. And obviously, you know, many spice mixtures have turmeric. Turmeric is not a lost cause for staining. Like, turmeric stains so deeply.
No, it's hard. It's one of the harder things. I mean, I think it's funny. In laundry camp, I say the two very hardest stains to remove are barbecue sauce and lipstick, which you would have both of those at a party, depending on who you're going with. But turmeric is probably right next to it. And the reason is it's so fine, it penetrates so deep into the fiber. So okay. The trick is to, you know, to get that oxygen bleach to penetrate right along with it. So, you know, you want the water to be like bath temperature. So it's pretty warm. So the fibers will loosen up and just let it sit in there. And you'll actually see it change color. It will go from that bright, bright yellow to like a rusty red. And once that's happened, you can put it right into the washing machine.
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay. So when you see that color change, it means it's already breaking down.
And then, right.
Cool. I want to get to another yellow colored thing. I know we talked about your love of peaches. Peaches are one of my two favorite fruits in the world, along with mangoes. I kind of think of the peach as the non-Caribbean mango. That's kind of that's sort of the vibe I get with them. And the best peaches and the best mangoes are the ones that, again, will get all over you. How do you get those out?
Well, I mean, the best part is when it gets all over you. So, you know, you don't worry. Actually, it'll come there again. I hate to sound like a broken record, but oxygen bleach will lift it right out. You can get it out with soap and a brush. So if you were on vacation mm-hmm. and, you know, you had an incredible mango, you can get that out with soap and a brush. But if you're at home and you have access to your sort of your full toolkit, the easiest thing to do is a bit of oxygen bleach and it'll come right out. I would actually at that point just throw the oxygen bleach in the washer with the clothes. I wouldn't even go through dipping it because it'll come right out.
Well, that's great. And when you say a brush, you know, there are certain fabrics that I would be afraid to scrub, right? Like, so when you're talking about brushing, are you, is it like certain fabrics work, or like these are really like soft brushes? What kind of brush are you talking about?
I use a horsehair brush. I mean, a horsehair brush is my sort of go-to.
Okay.
And a horsehair brush is safe. You can scrub like baby cashmere with it. When it gets wet, it gets so soft that you can scrub anything with it without any problem. And when I say scrub, I mean, I literally scrub. I don't delicately blot. I don't do those things. I don't have time.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of laundry. I love clothes and I love to spill. I love food and I love to spill. So I have a lot of laundry, and that's not even including my partner. And so I go at it with a brush. And if you use a horsehair brush, you can scrub anything you want and you're just fine.
Okay, great. And I, let me ask you one more thing, because we are a food show and I'm not this, frankly, I'm not classy enough a person, but Sally is. And so she keeps telling me, I need to ask you about table linens.
Oh, sure.
So you have a variety of foods on the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so you get a little grease stain here, you get a little tomato stain there. So you're going to have a variety of different stains on this table linen. Do we need to go and identify every stain differently and treat them like you've said? Or like, what do you do with a big table linen that has all kinds of different stuff on it?
Sure. Well, actually, this is a really great question, because it does have every kind of stain. I mean, hopefully it was a really good party. So, you know, there's butter and there's chocolate.
Oh, God.
And there's red wine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many things. And, you know, you hope that everybody just had so much fun that your tablecloth is trashed. And, you know, I think that everybody should use cloth napkins every day. So it's easy. And generally what I would do in this case, the first thing I would do is I would just wash the linens. I would wash them in warm water with a little bit of soap, some oxygen bleach, and I'd probably throw some baking soda in as a booster. And I'd wash everything. After you've washed everything, just let it air dry. And then anything that's still there, I would scrub it with soap and a brush, and that'll probably take care of it. But I wouldn't necessarily go through, because, you know, maybe like you're Martha Stewart and you're having a party for, you know, 120. I don't think I'd want to scrub 120 napkins. So I would just wash them all. And then when it's done, oxygen bleach, you know, then I'd use a soap and a brush on anything that's left. You know, this is a big thing at Thanksgiving. You know, at Thanksgiving, your tablecloth is covered. And so just wash it. It's easy. And then just scrub anything that's left, because as long as you don't put it through the dryer, easy breezy.
So you've taken this tablecloth out. Now it's like sopping wet, right? Do you just let it air dry first and then give it a good look?
That's what I would do. I'd throw it across a chair or something, you know.
And if we have dried something, then what do we need to do then?
Oh, sure. I mean, sometimes you have like, you know, your grandmother's tablecloth and you pull it out after 5 years and you're like, what the heck happened to this thing? The first thing to do is wash it. Wash it again, because you want to just see if like something's gotten on it from storage, or, you know, you've gotten the stain. If you've gotten the hardcore stain in there, use a little bit of oily soap, and you can use dish soap. You cannot use like a super strong dish soap. Like, you cannot use Dawn,
okay,
but you can use like a very gentle sort of oily soap. You put it on, you sprinkle oxygen bleach on it, because it's a powder, and you make a paste. You let it sit about a half an hour, and you run really hot water straight through the stain, and that will take it out.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it's everything's in your kitchen, so it's easy, you know. But, like, I love estate sales in the summer. You know, talk about barbecues and estate sales. To me, that's the summer.
Yeah.
And I will find these vintage linens that, you know, have stains on them, and I just bring them home and do that, and it comes right out.
That's incredible. All right, Patrick, this is great. I feel very prepared. I feel very prepared for the world now.
Well, you should, because, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can't be afraid of your clothes, because, you know, there's so many things to eat. You know, I can't be afraid of eating things because of my clothes.
I like it. I like the attitude. I like the confidence. I like the joie de vivre. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was so fun.
You're great. Patrick Richardson is the author of Laundry Love, Finding Joy in a Common Chore. All right, so now that we have confidence in our wardrobe, it's time to talk about the cookout. And Nicole A. Taylor knows about the cookout. You can find her eating and hosting outside all summer long on any given weekend, but every year she goes really hard for Memorial Day barbecue, for Juneteenth, then July 4th, then Labor Day, and she might keep it going for HBCU homecomings too. Her new book, Watermelon and Red Birds, is a collection of celebratory black recipes, both traditional and new ones, for cookouts, outdoor gatherings, and of course, Juneteenth. Hey, Nicole, it's great to see you.
Hello, Francis. So great to talk to you.
The same. You know, it's kind of funny because I remember talking with you years ago about your first book, The Up South Cookbook. And, you know, that book is kind of about how you don't live in the South, but you brought Southern traditions up to the North with you. And now your new book is all about Juneteenth celebrations, which is also a black tradition that started regionally and then spread. So maybe we can start by, can you tell us the story of Juneteenth and how the celebration grew to be a national one?
June 19th, 1865 is the day that General Granger arrived on the island of Galveston and told more than 200,000 enslaved black Texans that they were free. And what's really important about that date, it was more than 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. So it was a very glorious day for, you know, hundreds of thousands of black Texans.
Yeah. And, you know, the cruel irony that it was 2 years later, like no one told them, you know, it was the kind of thing where history shows that, you know, change does not happen at the stroke of a pen.
Yeah. And many historians and scholars believe that one of the reasons why that information was held from enslaved people was because the plantation owners wanted the free labor for another cotton harvest. And so that is kind of like, wow, to hold something that many people were looking for, you know, their entire lives was very cruel, you know?
But then it was a celebration. And so tell us about that celebration and how it grew from a, you know, one that was specific to black Texans and just became a celebration for black people around the country.
Yeah, during the Great Migrations, that's when, you know, hundreds and thousands of African Americans left the American South and they went to the West, to Los Angeles or to Seattle, Washington, or even to the Midwest, to places like Oklahoma and Milwaukee. And so when particularly Texans left their home state, and Texans who celebrated Juneteenth and were super connected to the holiday, it went with them. Mm-hmm. So we have to thank the Great Migration for so many things. And we definitely know that Juneteenth was always about Texas, but it spread all over the United States.
Yeah. And tell me about your book's title, Watermelons and Red Birds. What's the significance of that title?
Wow. Watermelon. That's just such a classic all-American summertime fruit, wouldn't you say, Francis?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wanted to make sure that I brought in, you know, what we all Americans love about the summertime. And that's, you know, chilling, relaxing, having something super luscious and sweet to snack on. And this, the second part of the title of Watermelon and Red Birds is a very special story that my mom used to tell me all the time. And that is, you know, if a bird, a red bird or a cardinal appears outside, it's an ancestor. It's someone in our family coming back to say hello and to blow them a kiss. That it was a symbol of good luck. And that part of the title literally just came to me one day while I was on MTA. And I was like, that's it. I remembered that story. And I'm like, that title says everything about the past, the present, and the future. And so that's it, Watermelon and Red Birds.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Okay, so let's talk about the actual celebration that you enjoy on Juneteenth. And obviously the book is centered on that celebration, but it's about outdoor gatherings and beautiful things you can have all summer long, entertaining, and, you know, items that have cultural significance and items that are just, hey, let's just get together and have a great time.
You know, the beauty about Juneteenth is that you'll find some of the same Juneteenth foods on Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find juicy chicken burgers on 4th of July. You'll find the red hot links on Labor Day as well. You'll even find buttery, sweet pound cake, maybe with a dollop of whipped cream, on the Juneteenth table. So the Juneteenth table, I think what makes it super unique is that it's very seasonal.
Okay.
Berries, peaches, vegetables like corn, beautiful tomatoes, eggplants. Those are all fruits and vegetables that are typically at their peak during the month of June. And the Juneteenth table is full of them.
We'll have more with Nicole A. Taylor, author of Watermelon and Redbird, in just a minute. And then, a primer on low-alcohol party drinks with Natasha David, author of Drink Lightly. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is The Splendid Table, the show for curious cooks and eaters. We're talking right now with Nicole A. Taylor, whose cookout you definitely want to be invited to. Let's get back to it with her. Okay, so let's talk about the actual celebration that you enjoy on Juneteenth, and what might you find on a typical Juneteenth table? I want to know about red drink, leafy greens. Tell us about some of those.
Red drink, wow. It is such an important part of the Black experience, the global Black experience. This is what I say in the red drink chapter. It's a sidebar titled Color Coded. This hibiscus tea, minus the sweetener, is known as bisop in Senegal, where it's the national dish. And in North Africa, it's called cardadi. In the Caribbean, it's called sorrel. And in Mexico, agua de Jamaica. And at American gatherings and in pop culture, it's called red drink. I declare any vibrant and bright beverage, soda, fruit juice, or spritz A-OK for Juneteenth. But remember to thank the descendants of enslaved Africans for keeping this ritual alive. So essentially, I'm talking about the hibiscus flower that is native to tropical and subtropical regions. And for thousands, hundreds of years, people, Black people particularly, all over the globe, they've steeped this flour and sweetened it, or maybe not sweetened it, and sipped it. And so that ritual was brought in our bones, inside of us, during the transatlantic slave trade. So you see it in all these different forms. And today, for Juneteenth, the red drink is always on the table in some form. So it's special. You're going to see that at Juneteenth and many other Black celebrations throughout the year.
Yeah. It's so incredible, right? Because there is this thing of, you know, even if the red drink isn't made with hibiscus on every table, in some cases, like you said, it could be a fruit juice, it could be a soda, it could be a drink mix. But there is this cultural memory of the experience of having something beautiful and bright and red to drink that goes back, you know, so many generations, so many centuries, and even if to this day, like, the history of it is lost on people, that sense of that cultural memory and having to have that thing, and that thing is a part of us, and sitting around this table and pouring a glass of that means something to you and to your friends and your family, even if the history is divorced from you, is so powerful. I love that you say it's in your bones.
It is.
It's just, that is the unbroken chain that comes down through the generations, right? And I think, like, that's such an act of holding on to what you can, of what makes you you.
Totally, 100%. I was a grown adult before I understood the connections of red drink to Africa or to Brazil or to Martinique. And just to know and understand that the strawberry lemonade that you see in so many plantation cookbooks as connected to a forced journey of my people. So it is super special on Juneteenth when we're drinking and we're outside and the music is blaring. If we just pause for a second before that sip and just like to honor like exactly what you said, how that memory is inside of us.
Yeah. I want to get to one more dish with you, though, because I'm fascinated by this. Because I love that, you know, part of this book is about honoring the ancestors and traditions, and part of it is sort of putting your own personal modern spin on some of those items. And part of it is, like, it's sort of a guide to hosting cookouts. And I love that, like, one of the first instructions in the book on how to host a cookout is, like, number one, find the person in your life that is the potato salad queen and make sure they're bringing the potato salad.
Oh my God. Listen, Francis, in this cookbook, like, there's a lot of history and a lot of woosah, but there's a lot of fun. And have you not been on the internet and seen all the memes about the auntie and the potato salad?
I want to know from you. Okay. I want to hear from Nicole Taylor.
Listen,
the primacy of the potato salad.
Have not ever been to a cookout, particularly a Black cookout, where there's potato salad on the table and not at least one time someone says, who made the potato salad? It is probably the most revered side item, yes, side dish ever. Like, the person that makes this potato salad has to be someone that can throw down, meaning they know how to cook. And they have that intuition, because potato salad, and I say this in my recipe for Southern-ish potato salad, that you have to taste. You can go by the recipe, but you have to taste, put it on the back of your hand, taste a little bit, add a little bit more salt, add a little bit of more vinegar, add a little bit more peppers. It is a skill. And so you want somebody that has clean hands. You want somebody that has cleaned all the cat hair off of their sink. You want to make sure that it's that very special person and it always tends to be that special person that's super funny or super stylish. They have a personality, because potato salad is its own conversation and it tends to match that person. So yeah. Listen, when you get invited to the Juneteenth cookout, just listen for the phrase, who made the potato salad?
All right. So when you get asked to make the potato salad, how do you make it? What is your ultimate potato salad when you are the potato salad queen?
So I think all of my family and friends know that I'm going to always come with a spin. And they're not necessarily expecting me. They know that I can do the Southern version because my mom is the potato salad person. But in this recipe, I use bacon fat.
Okay.
I use sour cream.
Okay.
I crumble the bacon, the cooked bacon that I've, you know, rendered. I also use pickled banana peppers.
Oh, nice. Here we go. Mm.
Dried mustard. What else am I missing that's in my Southernish? Fennel. Fennel and onions. So I use that. I saute fennel and onions in that bacon fat. Yeah,
oh, hello.
It's really good. Yeah, it's totally good. I know it's like, huh, what? But it really is.
No, I'm with you. That's sweetness.
Totally. It's all the elements of a Southern potato salad. And when I say elements, you have the tang from the pickle juice, the pickled banana peppers, and a lot of people put in pickled relish. A lot of recipes, and my recipe has mustard, so mustard is in there. So you have all the ingredients. I just switched them up just a little bit. So instead of the mayo, you have the sour cream. And I'm going to give you a little secret for all the people. If you haven't turned to that page, the key to great potato salad is to really salt and season your potatoes while they're warm and don't overcook them.
Yes.
That is the most important thing.
You said it. All right, Nicole, these are words to live by. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you,
Francis. It was
great
to talk with you.
Enjoy your summer.
I will. I'll see you at the cookout.
Yes. You are invited.
If I get invited.
You are definitely invited, Francis.
Nicole A. Taylor is the author of Watermelon and Redbirds, a cookbook for Juneteenth and Black celebrations. You can find her awesome recipe for Southernish potato salad at splendidtable.org. Thank you. All right, so I don't really drink. So to be absolutely honest, most like great cocktail or wine books are kind of lost on me. But one day at work in my publishing job, I kept wanting to check out this book that my company put out called Drink Lightly. The author is Natasha David, who was Imbibe Magazine's Choice for Bartender of the Year in 2020. And, you know, I just love that there is this book about great low and no alcohol cocktails by a serious mixologist. And that sounds perfect for a summer afternoon party. Hey, Natasha, it's great to talk to you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. So, and I am a little less sweaty because it was incredibly hot yesterday. And all day I was thinking about, you know, I can't wait to talk to you about refreshing drinks on a summer day. So here you are. And you are a renowned bartender. You have made drinks in some of the most groundbreaking bars in New York, including your own dearly departed Nightcap. But so I want to ask, though, like, you obviously take that work very seriously. When you have a cookout, when you have a picnic, do you set up a bar and like stand there mixing drinks? Like everything must be just so, or?
You know, I think for many people, the expectation is that I just want to make cocktails for people all day long. But honestly, like when I'm hosting a cookout, I want to do all my prep work beforehand. Mm-hmm. I batch things before, I prep all my syrups, I make my juices beforehand. And then honestly, just love throwing together punches. So that people can just kind of serve themselves. And it seems all very effortless because I'm not standing there doing anything. And I also then get to like enjoy the party and have fun.
Right on. So say it's a hot day and you have people over and you're thinking about what you're going to make in this sort of a batch cocktail or a punch or something like that. What are you thinking? What should we make this summer?
Well, to me, the most refreshing thing, and I think this is kind of just a universal, you know, thought and desire in a hot summer day, is watermelon, right? Mm. Watermelon is so juicy. It's so sweet. And it also quenches a thirst, right?
Yeah,
and
totally.
It kind of goes perfectly with anything that you're throwing on a grill because it cuts through any kind of fat on a sausage or a burger, you know, like a grilled chicken. So I love incorporating watermelon juice, fresh watermelon juice into punches. Mm. One of the recipes that I included in my book that I just wrote, it's called the Jam Sessions.
Okay.
Which I feel like already hopefully makes you kind of think about, you know, communal sitting around and having fun.
Yeah, totally.
And it's one of those drinks that is just so easy to throw together because it doesn't require a lot of effort. So it's really just some fresh watermelon juice. It's a whole bottle of Fino Sherry. And then just to kind of like add a little bit more depth to all of it, a little bit of ginger kombucha. And you just kind of put it all in a pitcher, add some ice. You can throw in some cucumber slices. You can even throw in like a little bit of citrus if you wanted to. And then everyone can just kind of help themselves. And it's super refreshing. What I also love about it, which I think fits into a barbecue setting really well, is that it's low in alcohol.
Yeah.
And to me, sort of low ABV drinking fits this world very, very well because it's usually hot. It's usually during the day.
Yeah.
And you're surrounded by people that you're catching up with. So you want to be able to be social, right? And you want to be able to talk and have lively conversation. And so you just maybe want like that tiny bit of, you know, happy buzz, but not, you know, knock yourself over.
No, totally. And that's actually totally why I want to talk to you. I love the idea of having something that you could, you know, enjoy, but you can enjoy over a long period of time and it doesn't have to have like such a huge wallop. Let me bring it back to the jam session drink really quick. When you say fresh watermelon juice, are you buying a watermelon and scooping the flesh out and putting in a blender? How do you make that juice?
Yeah, that's literally what I do. It's so easy. Okay. I get a whole watermelon. You obviously want to find like the ripest watermelon you can find. I'd even say like when it comes to juicing a watermelon, like it's sort of at that verge of being almost too ripe. That's when it's like really, really good to juice. And it's so sweet and just luscious. I cut it up. I throw it in the blender and then I strain it. Super, super easy.
Cool. And the straining, like you want some of that pulp in there, right?
Yeah, you're not going. Yeah, you don't have to go through like a super, super fine strainer. Just like, you know, even a colander, honestly, like just to get the larger chunks out.
Okay, perfect. What's another drink you would have on a hot summer day?
You know, Another one I just love is just like you have a bottle of bubbles in your fridge and you add some sort of like either it's a vermouth or you add a little bit of Amaro. You just throw it over ice and you add some fruit. Like it's just simple. It's delicious. It's a crowd pleaser. And it just looks really beautiful. And then, you know, anything that has bubbles to me screams festive fun. So,
yeah, totally.
You know, what's better than a little bit of bubbles with your hot dog?
Okay, so you're talking about having bubbles, you're having, you know, Prosecco, I mean, if you're really feeling it, some champagne. And then you mentioned vermouth. And so I'm thinking, how should we keep stocked? Like, what should we have on hand?
Yeah, totally. Great question. The things I always tell people to have on hand to just be able to throw something together whenever, and these are also ingredients that like are great sipped on their own. So they have multiple uses. Oftentimes they're supporting characters in classic cocktails. So you're going to get a lot of use out of them no matter what.
Yeah.
I love a vermouth, either a sweet or a blanc or a dry or a rosé, any color really, because they all, you know, they're basically like little cocktails in itself, right? It's an aromatized wine. It's got a lot of herbs and barks and spices and peels. So they're always just like already so delicious. So just by adding, you know, even just like a spritz of seltzer water or something, you automatically have something that's delicious. To me, a huge summer favorite is Lillet. I love, love, love Lillet. I particularly love the Lillet Rosé, especially in the summer months. It's out of all of them, the sort of driest one. It's got a lot of really great, bright grapefruit flavors to it. And again, so easy. Just throw it in a glass with some seltzer water. Anything that you have lying around in your fridge, you can put in there. You can put herbs in there. You can put citrus in there. You can put fruit in there, grapes, like whatever. If you have canned fruit, like canned fruit works great. Like anything in a Lillet spritz is just delightful to me.
I love that.
And then, you know, again, I'm a huge fan of sherries. And then I love fruit liqueurs. I think if you're trying to like up your game a little bit and have a little bit of an interesting twist on things, adding just, you know, a tiny little amount of a fruit liqueur to a spritz will completely change it. And, you know, it's summer. Like, I'm never going to not talk about peach liqueur and how delicious it is in a white wine spritz or, you know, anything, a Lillet spritz. It just makes everything better.
That sounds extremely classy, but not necessarily fancy, which I think is
not
like
fancy. Exactly,
a sweet fancy spot. Actually, because you mentioned canned fruit, it reminded me of something else you write about, which is totally something I've never seen before, which is that you like to use jam in your drinks too. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
I love jams. What can I say? I often joke that like Bon Marmont should be my sponsor in life because I use so much of their product. Jams are a really great way if you don't have like a huge back bar to add another flavor component to a cocktail, right? It's, you just take a spoonful, like literally you just, you know, you're making a margarita and you've got some, I don't know, raspberry jam in the fridge. You throw a bar spoon of that into your margarita mix. Like it's going to be just delicious and delightful, right? Just adds like a little bit of a punch of flavor. Another reason I love jams and why I use them so much in my book specifically is because they add a lot of texture, and a lot of low ABV spirits sort of lack texture because they don't have that full oomph of full-proof spirits.
The viscosity.
Exactly. Yeah. So I often use, you know, all that nice pectin in there will automatically give a drink a much sort of like more intense and rich and full mouthfeel that I really enjoy.
I love that. I love that.
And you know what else is actually really great about jam? Sorry, because I have so much to say about jam.
Go about jam. Yeah.
Is, you know, in the months where where fresh fruit isn't available, when you can't, you know, like get a peach or you can muddle a strawberry because they're, you know, out of season, like you just get a jam in the winter and you can sort of transport yourself. So yeah, I love jam.
Yeah, I love it.
It's a great little trick.
Fabulous. Well, Natasha, thank you so much. It's been a blast.
Thank you.
Natasha David is the author of Drink Lightly, a lighter take on serious cocktails. You can find her recipe for jam sessions at splendidtable.org. And that is our show for the week. I hope you have a phenomenal cookout season. And remember, if you have cookout questions for us, or any kind of cooking question, record them as a voice memo on your phone, email them to contact@splendidtable.org. APM Studios are run by Chandra Kavadi, Alex Schaffert, and Joanne Griffith. Beth Perlman is our executive producer, and The Splendid Table was created by Sally Swift and Lynn Rosetto Casper. It's made every week by technical producer Jennifer Lukey, producer Erica Romero, digital producer James Napoli and managing producer Sally Swift. I'm Francis Lamb, and this is APM Studios.